The Drinking Hour on Food FM.
You're listening to The Drinking Hour with David Kermode in association with the International Wine and Spirit Competition, using the best in the world to judge the best in the world.
Hello and welcome to The Drinking Hour from Food FM with me, David Kermode. Green wine is our subject today. Well, sustainability, really, the watchword of the times as climate change threatens the planet. The winner of the inaugural IWSC Green Wine Initiative, Virgil Joly, joins us from his vineyard in the Languedoc, along with Ray O'Connor, MW, wine director at Naked Wines, a champion of his wines.
The Drinking Hour on Food FM.
We have red, we have white, even orange wine, but green wine is what we need more of. Sustainability is on everyone's lips at the moment, but it's action that was rewarded, not words, in the first ever IWSC Green Wine Initiative Award, created to recognise the myriad of considerate viticulture and winemaking practices underway across the world at the moment. The shortlisted producers were Stopham Vineyard, Everflight, Simpson's Wine Estate, and Domaine Virgil Joly, all of them doing great work on sustainability. But the winner, awarded a £7,500 bursary from the IWSC Foundation, was Virgil Joly. And he joins us from his estate in the Languedoc, along with Master of Wine Ray O'Connor, wine director at Naked Wines, who's back in the UK, and who sells Virgil's very popular wines. Virgil and Ray, welcome both of you to The Drinking Hour.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll come to this award shortly, which is, you know, richly deserved. I was on the judging panel for this one, which was a great privilege. But first, Virgil, we should sort of start at the beginning, really. Could you introduce us to your domain, where it is, and the grapes that you're working with?
So my domain is in the south of France. We are located in Languedoc, in a village called Saint-Saturnin. And we work mainly in my own vineyard, very Languedoc grape variety, so Grenache, Syrah, Carignan, Cinsault. But as winemaker, I work also Merlot and Sauvignon, for example.
Mm. And are you working with some older vines there as well?
So in my domain, we have vines from 40 to 60 years old, so very old vine. And in fact, I choose to make wine in Saint-Saturnin because it's not a family business. It's a business I start myself. So I choose Saint-Saturnin because in this place, I could find old vine with a very high quality soil, very nice terroir.
And tell us a bit about yourself as well, your own personal winemaking journey. What inspired you to want to make wine?
In fact, I'm born in the south of Rhône Valley. My grandparents got a vineyard in Ventoux, the famous mountain to be cycling. Family reason, the vineyard go to some of my uncles. But, you know, with my parents, we go to live in the city. It was fashionable in that moment. When I was young, the idea was not necessarily vineyard. But then I realized, yes, I love nature and I want to make wine. So I was graduate as winemaker and working a few years as winemaker, mainly south of Rhône, Languedoc. And I had few experience also in Chile, Viña Santa Rita. Then for 2000, I realized I really want to make my own wine. So in 1999, I start to find a location, a place to make my own wine. And that's why I choose Saint-Saturnin. As I say, it was old vine. It's a special appellation d'origine contrôlée. Saint-Saturnin, like, you know, a little like village appellation from south of Rhône. And it was the soil also, it's chalk. And so it's more similar than Châteauneuf-du-Pape terroir. So I fell in love in that place, old vine, nice location. So I start to grow my vineyard in 2000.
Okay, well, let's introduce Ray at this point. Ray, you're a a big believer in these wines at Naked. That the website is positively gushing about Virgil. Almost annoyingly perfect. He's ultra-organic, with the certificates to prove it. Dashingly good-looking, with a beautiful wife who fell in love with him after one harvest. Stupidly talented with wine. This is a kind of Naked Wines love-in, isn't it?
Yes, I guess so. It's also reflected in Virgil's followers, let's say, on the website. I think he has 24,000 or 25,000 followers. So they have sort of voted with their own clicks and pockets. And yeah, they're just a fan of his style of wines. And that's something I hold Virgil in very high regard for, because he absolutely understands what the customer wants. And as they leave feedback on the wall, most of it good, occasionally, you know, can't please all the people all the time. But Virgil listens to that feedback, takes it on board, and has, I think, honed his style over the years since I've known him. And I've watched that I've been very impressed looking at that. Yeah.
And you're at MW. What do you love about the wines when you're tasting them?
You know, Virgil mentioned the whole Southern Rhone wines, and then he also does Sauvignon Blanc, Merlot. Of those two, the Sauvignon and the Merlot, it's just the, you know, varietal typicity, the energy in those wines, which you kind of need, you know, to sort of wake you up. And then in the Rhone wines, you know that they're true to type, true to place, and they're sort of, it's the structure, the whole build around them. And there's a little bit, occasionally, a little bit of accepted natural French rusticity that adds charm. No flaws, but charm. So that's what I appreciate in the wines.
Yeah, rustic's an interesting word, isn't it? Because it's sometimes used by people like us as a bit of an insult, actually. But I love a bit of rusticity. I think it adds I mean it as a compliment. I think it adds, generally, when it's good rustic, it really adds some distinctive character, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's it. I think that's the best way of saying it, distinctive character, because you taste a lot of Grenache, you taste a lot of Syrah, and their blends, and some can sort of blend into one another, and you have to have a point of difference. And yeah, it's almost like Virgil's touch to it, you know, that whether that's the terroir of the region where he's making wine, or how he finishes the wine in the winery. And that's just, it's a signature, it's a style from Virgil, which I like that.
And before we get to talking to Virgil about what he's done to warrant this award, from your perspective at Naked Wines, how important is a winemaker's sustainability credentials to buyers like you, bosses like you effectively, but also to your customers?
Well, of course, like everyone, more and more so. And perhaps, you know, we've been taking it seriously for quite a while, but it's very much in the spotlight now. And it's very important because, well, A, we've just got a responsibility. And I consider the position I am in as almost a privilege. And therefore, I have a responsibility to ensure that what we do today is considered and for the future and sustainable. Our customers also, they let us know. We have various groups on our website, you know, for basically, you know, if you're new to the website or different topics. And one is our Green Wings site, and there we have, you know, a few thousand people join on there, and they're following different winemakers' updates and stories. And so it's very important to the customer, I believe. Recently, we did a vote. We always engage our customers, as I think some of your listeners will know. We often ask them, what should we do? Should we do A or B? And we listen to them. But we asked them, should we, or what would they think of a wine with no capsule, a topless bottle of wine? And I think we had 35,000 votes, and the figures were something like 96-97% voted, 93% voted in favor of, yeah, lose the capsule, just in the interest of sustainability, unnecessary additional packaging. So yeah, that's very important. And of course, we transport wine in bulk, as many other people do as well, but we've been doing that for a very long time now. I think probably about a quarter of our range is transported in bulk shipping, and just for the benefit of your listeners, to be very explicit in defining what that means. We don't buy wine in bulk. We don't trade in bulk. Our winemakers in New Zealand, Australia, Argentina, they buy the grapes, or they own the grapes, they make the wine, and rather than putting it into a glass bottle and transporting it, we put it into one large flexi tank or ISO, and we transport it across the world, reducing the carbon emissions, and then it's bottled here closer to home. And so little by little, those things help, you know, towards our sustainability approach to things.
Yeah, I mean, that bulk transportation thing is a no-brainer, I think. We'll come to packaging a bit later on, but yeah. Virgil, first of all, let's go to the vineyard. Tell us about some of the things you have done which warranted this award with biodiversity in the vineyard.
For me, the first thing was in 2000 when I started, I was certified as organic. So now it's more fashionable and more of my neighbor are working organically, but that means we don't use any chemicals and we don't use GMO. So that was all in 2000 a challenge, because we didn't have so much equipment and knowledge to know how to run the vineyard. So that was the first point. Then after a few years working as organic, I want, you know, develop biodiversity. So I find here in south of France some specialists to help me, and so we were planting trees, so single trees or a spot of trees. We also made a pond in the vineyard, which is quite unusual in south of France, because it's not like a pond in UK. You can imagine we have water just during spring and autumn when it's raining. So it's a temporary pond, but it's very amazing, because you just make the hole, the rain is falling, and after a few days, some insects were living inside. First, it's a mosquito, but rapidly the mosquito are eaten by some other insects, and it's big life inside after just a few days. Oh. Then in a vineyard also, we realized it was not a lot of insects, because as summer are very hot and dry, we was used to destroy the grass. And so just the vineyard. And we realize without grass, you don't have insects. So now we find a way to let grass. The idea is to have green tracks, you know, in between trees and pond around, and on the vineyard have grass. So that's like I explained with the pond. It's very, you know, just after one season, it completely changed. We have a lot of butterfly, a lot of insects. Yeah, it's amazing, because something it's very, you know, you can touch it. It's very visible what you do for biodiversity. And it goes very fast. You do something, and after a few days, few weeks, you have a life who are here who was not just before.
Wow, that must be very rewarding, very exciting to see results so quickly.
Yeah, that's exciting. And it's not so fast, in fact, because the problem is, you know, when I try to let grass, for example, then we had big competition for vineyard. So you have to find the balance in between grass and vineyard and find the good balance to see the result. But yes, it's amazing and very, it give a lot of confidence, we can say that. I'm very happy with that. And it's very, as I say, visible.
Yeah. Ray, I remember when I was first specializing in wine, I'd be somehow conditioned to think that vineyards should look all neat and tidy with manicured vines and just soil underneath them. And actually, if you go to some Bordeaux estates or some Napa estates, it still looks very much like that. But actually, that's really not ideal, is it? We kind of need biodiversity.
Yeah, absolutely. The vineyards are living organisms themselves. And I think the importance, the important role a winemaker or grape grower can play is feeding that culture. you know, and providing habitats where you're going to attract, as Virgil said, insects who in turn are, you know, whether they're prey or predators for other beings in the vineyard. They also go on to a really key part, which I think it was probably Champagne recognized, that they had almost murdered their soil with spraying, and that they had blue soil, and it was they turned it around. You know, well, it took time, but they had to. And an understanding of the importance of the life in the soil, the microflora in the soil, this comes from, you know, above the ground, and then it sort of slowly feeds underground, where, you know, the insects slowly die naturally, and their humus integrates into the soil. This microflora then has a natural symbiotic relationship with the vine roots, and so it gives off, it gives them nutrients, and it consumes in return. And so it's a very important thing, and thankfully more and more is understood about it now, and it is becoming more widespread. One of our winemakers, Frank Massar, he was ex-sommelier, and now he's making wine in Priorat in Spain, and he's French, but making wine in Spain, and he has a fantastic biodiversity program around his vineyards. And Virgil, you mentioned butterflies, and he is he's collecting, he has an inventory of the flora and fauna in his vineyard, and he's recorded something like 70 different butterflies, which basically won't necessarily have an influence on the vine so much, but it is just a reflection of the health of the vineyard, that it attracts, that there is so much life form there. And he creates different habitats, like chopped wood. He'll leave it so bees can nest, and then whilst the plant is self-pollinating, it attracts, the bees pollinate other flowers, which attracts other positive insects. So it's a beautiful thing once you think about it.
Yeah, kind of virtuous circle, yeah. I suppose. Yeah. Virgil, once you get beyond the vineyard, tell us what you've done in terms of sustainability in the winery.
In fact, it's a new winery we work now. We built it in 2018. Most of the wineries are underground. So that means we don't need air conditioning to keep the cool temperature on the winery. So that was the first thing. So we have to use less energy for cooling the winery. Also, we have a solar panel produce all the electricity for lights and all the equipment who doesn't need too much power. So that works something like 70% of the time for all winery. And since long time also, we was working to reduce our water consumption. So for that, we use equipment to reduce the volume of water we are using to clean the tank and so on. Also, now we are trying to use ozone to clean the tank. That means we don't need any water to clean the tank, for the I don't know in English how it's called, it's disinfection.
Yes, you're disinfecting. Yep.
Disinfecting. So to disinfecting the tank, now we don't use water. We use a gas called ozone. So like that, we don't use the water for this.
And water is a big issue for wine production, isn't it, Virgil?
As winemaker, and I was working in many places where winemaker doesn't care on water they use. So we can't say in industry we are used to use a lot of water to make one hectoliter of wine. Sometimes you need two times more of water. But if you are focused on reducing what you need, yes, you can. We use very few. For my winery, we use the same quantity of water as one family of four persons for a year.
Wow.
So it's very small.
Yeah, well, well done. So, Virgil, tell us what you've done with packaging and bottle weight, because that's also a key part of the story, isn't it?
Yes, so by chance, now on the market, we can find lower bottles. So we use lower bottles, and that make a big difference because you need less carbon to produce a bottle, then to transport bottle, and so on. Also, we was working in packaging. So in fact, we use box laying down. We use box where the bottle is laying down. So for a box of 12, you need more cardboard than for a box of 6. And especially because of the divider were inside. So for some of the bottles, we use 6 box bottles without divider. And so we save a lot of cardboard than a 12 box with a divider, 12 box bottle with divider.
Wow, some of these things are so simple, really. Actually, Ray, that's a good point. You don't have to be doing really elaborate things to make a difference, do you?
No, exactly. It's just about taking the time to slow down and critically challenge what we've all been doing without thinking for the past few years or decades even. And that's it. And I believe the sentiment is live amongst all, you know, winemakers and other retailers, UK and around the world. Everyone's also, you know, it coincides with inflation and price increases and so on. So people are like, okay, where can we save? But in general, it is about the intention is there to remove unnecessary packaging in there. We've been doing quite a bit, a great deal, actually. In fact, by the end of this year, 2022, we'll have saved 490 tons of glass by working with lighter bottles. And so that's, you know, that equates to about removing 1 million bottles worth out of our supply chain. So that's through just great work with our winemakers and the team. And but it's very important to, where possible, to remove weight from bottles.
Yeah, bottle weight has been a big focus just in the last couple of years. Jancis Robinson is sort of on the case. She had her scales out at one point, weighing bottles at tastings, which is great. Why do some wine bottles still kind of seemingly weigh a ton?
You know, I can only speculate, but I perhaps it's a status thing, you know, badge drinking, as they call it in the Far East. I believe, you know, heavyweight bottles are still the rage in China, and because it has a different, you know, positioning, and it's a sign of authority or wealth or so on. So yeah, I think it's just about, it's a bit antiquated, really. Even if you're not sustainable minded, it's just a bit a thing of the past now. We need to sort of be a bit smarter and look for greater, you know, elegance and in that regard, rather than just heavyweight, is my opinion.
Yeah, it's worth underlining, isn't it, that there is no correlation whatsoever between a heavy bottle and a really good sort of wine.
I guess it's a cue, you know, for shoppers in a shop, you know, where they walk in, occasionally they might find it as a quality cue. But so therefore, you know, people just have to work harder at sort of making each wine stand off the shelf and conveying the message on the back label without breaking the shelf with weight.
Yeah. And if a producer comes to you and says, you know, hey, Ray, I'd like to be with Naked. I'd like the help of your angels. And they have heavy bottles. You're going to have a conversation about that at the outset, are you?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And in fact, we have a winemaker, and we brought them on at the very beginning of COVID, if not just a little before that. And then I wanted to sort of see what else they had, and they sent me some more samples, and the top of their range was a heavy bottle. I tasted it and it was excellent, and which was not correlated to the weight of the bottle, but it was just a great wine. And I said, we'd like to do this. And in the interest of supporting that winemaker, I said, we can take this year, this bottle this year, but going forward, we would work on a different bottle, a lighter weight, and we've done that. That's Bosch Kloof, and we've done that, and with another winemaker in Spain. So we've just sort of said, going forward, you need to turn the oil tanker slightly. You know, it doesn't move fast. For some, it can, but if it's a brand new wine, you can just say, let's do this wine together. You co-create it, and then you can decide on the glass bottle. But it's some things that have already been bottled. It's about more of a long-term plan.
Well, it's great to hear that it's resulting in change already. Virgil, yeah. Naked has this angel model. How important has that been to you?
It's very important for us. First things, it will be the, we are used to respond to posts on Naked Wines. When you are a winemaker, sometimes you are in your vineyard, in your winery, and you are alone, far off of people and so on. And to be back in office, read the post, it gives you a bigger energy, you know, to realize your job gives pleasure to people, to angels. As Ray said before in introduction, I really read everything. I try to respond to everyone. And sometimes we have bad comments, and sometimes people say some comments, and that helped me to change a little the direction of some of my wine. And that's very nice things, you know, and I touch that quite every day. So I have a connection with UK quite every day with that. Regarding our business, and that's finally the most important, probably. So we was, since the beginning, we was founded. So that means Naked Wines provided the money to buy the grapes and to make the wine with. That means for me, I have no question of trying to find market for the wine I'm producing. I also, they take in charge the marketing. So, you know, I'm a winemaker. I'm a wine producer. I'm not somebody very keen with the marketing and so on. So they organize all the marketing around my job. So that's also very important. Yes, some of the winemaker and some people doesn't realize it could work, or they are thinking it's just marketing. But I can't say it's not just marketing. It's very important. And since 10 years, it's something who very help our company to continue to grow, and also to be able to work in some point who are less, who you don't have cash back. So when you work on biodiversity, you don't have cash back. And it's because Naked Wines secure my business. I have more time to slow down and make work on biodiversity and things like that. Another example I have, when few years ago now, Naked Wines want to have some Rhone Valley wine. They make a presentation on winemaker, private wine growers society, and people doesn't believe that, doesn't believe the system is good and the business will be good. So it's one of the reasons why now I'm producing three wines from Rhone Valley for Naked Wines. And you know, it was my dream to make a wine from my grandparents' vineyard in Ventoux. And thanks to Naked, I'm able to do that. I'm producing Ventoux, Lirac, Plan de Dieu, three places I really want to make wine, but I think it will be never possible. And without Naked Wines, I can't say it's not possible. So for us, it's a big, big thing. And we are very happy about the system. And also, you know, and some angel, archangels are very engaged. And it's kind of two groups in Naked Wines. You have angel, archangels, so the customers, Naked Wines teams, and growers, winemakers, and all work together and have their own view, and we exchange a lot. And yes, we are very, very happy. And as I said, it will be 10 years and we hope to continue a long time. It's very good business.
Good. Well, I suspect you will be continuing a long time after that particular answer, because it's going to help Ray answer the next question. Because Ray, you'll be aware in the industry, there are those people who look at this very eye-catching, innovative model for a business. And they say, well, this is, you know, this angel thing, this is kind of marketing guff.
I'm aware of some of the narrative from mostly in the wine industry, and I'm not too fazed by it. But if I needed to respond to it, I think it's the all anyone needs to do is to speak to winemakers. You know, if they don't take our word for how the model works, that's, you know, I don't understand that. But let's say the next step for them is to ask a winemaker, how does this actually influence you? And so Virgil has just spoken, which, you know, Virgil and I have not colluded on that. I haven't spoken to him today about that. But any other winemaker, and they're all around the world. We offer two options. We say, okay, would you like us to work the traditional model where, you know, I taste the wine and we agree to buy it, and then you pay up front the first time, and then maybe thereafter you pay on 60 days terms. And that's sort of what everyone in the industry does, or most. Alternatively, the naked model would be that winemaker who we see as the talent, and we want them to just focus on making the wine and not be stressed, distracted by anything other than focusing on the wine. We engage them to, they find the grapes in their area, be it Marlborough or Yarra Valley, wherever they are, and they come back to us and tell us the price per kilo of grapes. And line by line, we have a very open spreadsheet, basically. And we just line by line, okay, what's the key price per kilo of grapes? Okay, therefore, and what kind of oak do you want to use? First fill, second fill oak. Then we go on to the packaging and the importance, you know, how important it is to have a certain type of bottle. And then the last line on this sheet, where everything is just adding up, the last line is the profit per bottle. And that's where I don't involve myself. I said, right, you stick in whatever number you need there. Well, if they put in a figure that is, and they rarely do this, well, that was, you know, let's say a slightly inflated, well, the final price, they can see what the final price is, and they can see that, well, that's not really going to work. That's not going to hit. We're not going to break the model by funding, you know, it's not going to pay back to the customer. And so one thing is non-negotiable for me, in my view, is the profit. If they have to make what they have to make, that's fine. But what we can do is go back up the spreadsheet and say, okay, well, maybe you don't need that glass. Maybe we'll switch it over to screw cap from cork and capsule. And that's it. We pay for the grapes in advance, then we pay for the packaging at that time, and then we pay on collection. And the whole while, the winemaker has been free of risk, free from the responsibility of sales, free from the responsibility of marketing and travel and any of those things. And it is just a cost plus basis. And that is where the term naked comes from. So, and then, yeah, we collect, sell it, goes on the website. The customers who gave Naked the money in advance for me to give to the winemaker in advance, then they get the bottle, the price, at what it would cost had it not been funded. So therefore you include various other overheads, but they're getting it just at the cost plus basis. Yeah, and they speak to the winemaker. They speak to them on their wall. They speak to them when they come on tour. And so I think, you know, we've got 350,000 customers in the UK, and any detractors would have to say, are they all wrong, or are they all, do they all not believe, you know, really understand what's going on? Because they very, very much do understand the relationship they have and the influence they have on winemakers. I will just add in one thing, which I think sort of summarizes the ethos of it, is we have a winemaker in South Africa, Carmen Stevens, and she used to run a food kitchen in around Stellenbosch, outside of Stellenbosch. And she basically used to run lunches into schools to help children, you know, to keep them engaged in school. So they're better learning if they've been fed, because they weren't being fed at home in the morning before they came to school. She shared this with us. And at the same time, we were doing a free food Friday. So every Friday, department in our business would have to cook a soup for the rest of the business, that we'd all chip in some money, and then we'd give it to a local charity. And so we decided we'd help Carmen's this one time, we'd help Carmen's. And we I think we raised, you know, 500, 600 quid, something like that. And already, you know, when she put it into play, she said that has had an incredible effect just to reboot this food kitchen again. So the following, or a few months later, we said, well, why don't we get our customers and see if they want to play a part as well? So we asked everyone, would they give up their lunch for £3? And the first year, did we raise something around, like it was over £100,000. And wow. Last year we raised £750,000. And we, during lockdown, Carmen was feeding 18,000 pupils a day in lockdown. 18,000 people were queuing up for food. And the school attendance, the learning, the results, you know, the school reports, let's say, have all improved significantly. So, okay, that's not talking about wine, but that is talking about the sense of community that our customers feel, because they want to be part of that. And then they follow, the Carmen gives them updates and the kids give us updates and everything. And that's just basically reflects, I think, the ethos of where we work. I worked with Naked for 9 years, and I wouldn't work in a place that wasn't authentic. So take my word for it, if anything. Yeah.
Good answer. Tell us about, you talked about lockdown there. We're just, well, it's still around, but we're coming out of the pandemic, hopefully. Tell us about the COVID support scheme.
Yeah. So, you know, as I think everyone was fully aware, that there were some industries that benefited and others that really were hurt, like the restaurant industry, as well as, you know, others beyond that. But and we were fully aware that customers were coming to us because they were drinking at home, and we were already a direct to customer service. And so we felt quite early on, by April already, I think, we said we need to do something about all those who are really on the poor end of this situation. And so we're in the US, you know, we're Naked Wines UK, USA and Australia. And so globally, we raised a $5 million fund, which we put towards seeking out, and where we just opened an application form for winemakers around the world who would have been selling their wines to local restaurants, and invited them to submit them to us, and then we would pay cash up front, and then we would do a mixed case. So we had the Spanish case, so various producers, fantastic wines we brought in, and so they would send in wines to us, and we'd include it. And those, lost plenty of those winemakers have stayed on with us. I mean, incredible wine from, you know, Ramon de Cesar from Ribeiro, gold medal winning, the wines of Valdaya in Ribera, and the wines from Herancia de Altes in Terra Alta in Spain. And then it goes all around the world, Bosch Kloof in South Africa and so on. And those were the wineries we were able to help. But equally, because, I mean, I was quite aware, I used to be a sommelier for Gordon Ramsay many moons ago. And so I've come from I used to own bars as well in Luxembourg. So I've come from the hospitality sector as well. And I knew, okay, when all of this passes, because it too shall pass, we want wine to be very relevant again and in a very healthy state, because it won't continue like this. Things will get back to normal. And so I reached out to a number of UK agents, importers, typically those who we don't work with at all because we have our own model. But so I contacted a few people I know and said, okay, how are you doing this? Well, we're not selling because we're not selling to the restaurants. And I said, we can probably put some of your stock through our site to just inject cash flow to keep you above water, let's say. And we did that. That was the restaurant rescue case. And yeah, customers generally loved it. So it was the right thing to do at the right time, I think. And thank God we're out of it now.
Indeed. Yeah, hopefully. Fingers crossed. And actually, really good point about sustainability being seen in the round, you know, not just being about green things necessarily, but being about people's livelihoods and so forth. Virgil, how important to you was it to get this IWSC Green Wine Award?
It's a big satisfaction, you know. It's a big satisfaction because it's a way to recognize 20 years of work trying to develop biodiversity, to be respectable around things about things around us, to try to have less impact in our environment. So yes, it's a big satisfaction, and also it gives a big motivation to continue and to follow this way. for me, but also for my team, because, you know, sometimes I know they are a little tired and bored about all that things, especially because I'm very precise and I have to repeat sometimes things. But yes, it's a big motivation for all of our team to continue in this way. And as a way, we also have the satisfaction of see more butterfly, more insect, more pheasants, and more life in our vineyard.
And Ray, do you take the view that these kind of awards really mean something, really matter as well?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's recognition and also motivation then for others. You know, it should have a knock-on effect on others because it gives us as a team a real boost to know that, you know, that we are associated with these sound-minded producers and that there's room for more improvement. So I do sort of almost see it as a carrot for the next round of winemakers to convert to more sustainable style of winemaking and farming.
Mm. Virgil, congratulations again, first of all, on the award, which was, you know, richly deserved. It's a kind of slight tangent, but we have to mention Virgil's vineyard as well, because when I was doing my homework and actually inspired by something I read, I think, on the Naked Wine site, you've basically found a form of fame kind of by accident, because you ended up being certainly one of the subjects of a book by a British author, Patrick Moon, who spent a year in the Languedoc and then wrote about his experience. Tell us about how you ended up with your name on the title of the book.
It's strange things to be a character of a book. And it was a huge experience because Patrick Moon spent a year with me. He was following me in the vineyard and in the winery. It was something like 2001, so early beginning. It was a strange experience to read the book after, because, for example, Patrick Moon sees the situation by his own eyes and his own way to write that. So some situation was not funny for me, became funny, you know, on the book. It's very funny book, very easy to read and very funny. And then also what's strange at the beginning, it's people come in Saint-Saturnin with a book and looking for the small winery where I start in downtown. And you know, they are looking like at me and say, oh, but you are Virgil. I say, yes. And, you know, you are... Yes, character of book, and that was amazing. Then we, with Naked Wines, we had a second publication in 2014 with an extra chapter to update. Because a year, it's long, but in our story, you know, it's long-term story, the domain story, it's take times. It was, as I say, we build a new winery in 2018. So it's kind of, the story is following. So that was good to have a second version of the book.
Mm, I bet. Well, it's inspired me to want to read it as well. And it must be utterly bizarre to find yourself, not just the subject of a book, but also the subject of the title as well. A final question before I let you both go, because we tend to ask this on the Drinking Hour. It's a desert island wine. So, you know, the wine that you would have if you were stranded on your desert island. Ray, first of all, what would yours be?
Well, I could drink white Burgundy to beat the band till the cows come home, but I think more suitable but also delicious would be Madeira. Just, it is a long-lasting, heat-resistant bottle of nectar, and I love it. And I also don't imagine I'd have glassware. And although I advise your listeners to drink responsibly, there is something, I don't know, there's something utterly delicious about sipping Madeira from the neck, you know? And it's I don't know, maybe it's how it lands on your palate, but it's the best way to drink Madeira, in my opinion, is just by the bottle. So yeah, I'd probably go for one of those.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, it's amazing how often Madeira comes up in answer to that question. And frankly, if you're stuck on a desert island, I think probably consideration of responsible drinking might have got out of the window anyway. And Virgil, what would be your desert island wine?
I think I would be quite classic. It will be a Château Neuf du Pape from Château Montredon, because it's one of the domains where I was working. I make a practice as a winemaker when I was young. So it's kind of it's a terroir I love, and it will be a way to remind my youngness.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I tell you what, I suspect Château Montredon may well be on my list actually as well. So that's a great answer. As I said, congratulations to you, Virgil. Ray, thank you very much for shining a small light on the way Naked works, and also on the way sustainability can kind of integrate with the business model of a very successful business shifting a lot of stock. It's been great talking to both of you. Thank you very much for being with us on The Drinking Hour.
It was a great pleasure. Really great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The Drinking Hour on Food FM.
You're listening to The Drinking Hour with David Kermode in association with the International Wine and Spirit Competition, using the best in the world to judge the best in the world.
Okay, we round off as ever with a selection of medal winners from the IWSC Hall of Fame in 2022, and in Ray's honour, we have a selection from Naked Wines to look out for today. If you're a Naked Wines shopper, where better to start than Virgil Joly, 2020 Côte du Rhône Village Plan de Dieu, a classic Rhône blend of Grenache, Syrah and Mourvèdre, awarded a bronze medal. The judges said, gorgeously ripe and smooth with delightful flavours of black fruit and mocha on the palate. And that's delightfully priced as well, $10.99 for Angels. Next, a silver medal winning Pinot Noir from the wonderful Central Otago in the heart of New Zealand's South Island. Grasshopper Rock, Ernsklach Vineyard. Hope I've said that correctly. A Pinot Noir 2018 from winemaker Phil Hanford, who describes the project as a dynamic equity partnership of five slightly crazy families, which amused me. This won 90 points, getting it a silver medal. The judging panel said, bright aromatics, smoky and sweet, black fruit-driven palate with complex herbaceous notes, lovely varietal accents shining through, broad with a long finish. Staying in New Zealand, a Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc next from Bill and Claudia Small. This is Small and Small Sylvia Reserve Sauvignon Blanc 2021, awarded bronze medal. This is from the Awatere Valley. The judges said, tastefully restrained with the aromatic flavours of gooseberry, fresh herbs and crisp green peppers. And finally, to Rioja, Carlos Rodriguez, a former Naked Winemaker of the Year, Morum 2021 is a white Rioja, a blend led by Viura, known elsewhere as Macabeo in Spain, and also Tempranillo Blanco, which is relatively unusual as a grape variety and delicious. This was awarded a bronze medal. The judges said, a fresh example with candied citrus, red apple and pear notes, fresh and easy drinking. And that's it for another edition of The Drinking Hour. My thanks to Ray O'Connor, MW, and also to Virgil Joly. And congratulations again to him for winning that Green Wine Initiative Award as well. A real honour, richly deserved. You can follow us at Food FM Radio on Instagram and Twitter. I am Mr. Venusaurus on Instagram and Twitter. But until next time, from The Drinking Hour, it's goodbye.
The Drinking Hour on Food FM.
You're listening to The Drinking Hour with David Kermode in association with the International Wine and Spirit Competition, using the best in the world to judge the best in the world.